Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 54 degrees in mist and rain this morning. It's Friday, July 27th, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. The city of Sitka will continue defending a lawsuit brought by two residents in 2008. That's after the Sitka Assembly met in closed session Wednesday to discuss the litigation. Members unanimously voted in open session to direct Municipal Attorney Teresa Hillhouse to continue with the case. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
Jeff Farver and Mike Littman represent the group Sitkins for Responsible Government. They sued the city 4 years ago after it twice rejected a citizens' initiative from being on the municipal election ballot. The initiative would have required any disposal of city real estate worth over $500,000 to be approved by voters. That is already required by current municipal code, except at the Sawmill Cove Industrial Park. The initiative would have removed the park's exemption. The Sitka Superior Court upheld the city's decision not to certify the initiative. Farver and Littman appealed up to the Alaska Supreme Court and won. And in April, the Supreme Court told the Sitka Court to take another look. When asked for comment on Thursday afternoon, Municipal Attorney Teresa Hillhouse said she wanted to consult with outside counsel Michael Gaddy before briefing reporters on the city's stance. That could happen Friday morning. But in court filings from late May, the city laid out its reasons for opposing the Sawmill Cove initiative. Among them, the city argues that the initiative would deal with an appropriation of public assets, which is strictly the purview of the assembly. The city also says it is unclear whether the measure is an initiative or a referendum. But Littman and Farver want the court to reject that part of the city's argument. In court papers filed Monday, they argue that the Supreme Court said their petition is not confusing and misleading. Attorney Joe Geldhoff wrote in that paper that the, quote, defendants have the temerity to continue arguing that the petition is confusing and misleading, and even have the cheek to suggest that the trial court was confused. Farver and Littman have both said they'd drop the suit if the city would allow the measure to reach the ballot. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Alaska voters who might be thinking about passing up next month's state primary election should think again. The statewide Coastal Zone Management Program, which the legislature allowed to sunset last year, is coming back as a citizen initiative. High-profile speakers on both sides of the issue were in Sitka this week to put their case before the Chamber of Commerce. Ballot Measure 2 is unusual. It's a complicated policy issue, the kind of thing that even the two people debating the question agreed is best left to a legislature. The Alaskan Senate, which is run by a bipartisan coalition, voted to renew the program, which has been in place in the state since 1977. The House, however, came to a standstill over the bill and deadlocked 18-18 in the special session the governor called early last summer to address the matter. The vote was partisan, with only four Republicans joining Democrats to reinstate coastal management, but you wouldn't know that listening to Bruce Botello and Kurt Fredrickson speak at the Sitka Chamber of Commerce. Both men have decades of service in state government. Both made clear, well-reasoned arguments why, in Botello's case, citizens should restore coastal management, and why, in Fredrickson's case, the initiative is flawed. Bruce Botello is a four-term mayor of Juneau, the former state attorney general, a director of the Alaska Municipal League, a former trustee of the Alaska Permanent Fund. He told the chamber that most of Alaska's legislators had voted for some form of coastal zone management over the past 2 years, but had become divided over a larger principle.
I think the overall tension that existed was about allocation of power and responsibility between the state itself and communities.
Botello organized the Alaska Sea Party last year for a signature drive to put the question on the ballot, and signatures came in fast in Sitka and in other coastal communities referred to in the law as coastal districts. It was sold by Sitka Mayor Cheryl Westover and others as a way to give local communities a seat at the table when granting permits for coastal development. Botello said this was another sticking point for the legislature.
To what extent should statewide standards be fashioned by and district plans be approved by representatives of coastal districts?
Fredrickson, however, sees things differently. Kurt Fredrickson served as the commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation under Republican Governor Frank Murkowski, served as the deputy commissioner of the same department under Democratic Governor Tony Knowles. He served on Alaska's Coastal Management Policy Council and has received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the group. His fundamental objection to the initiative is that it adds a regulatory layer to government that is not accountable to voters.
One of my biggest concerns with ballot measure 2 is the board. As I mentioned earlier, I sat before boards that were very impressive, and they were made up of locally elected officials. That, to me, is very important.
Fredrickson is co-chair of Vote No on 2. He argued that special interests could capture seats on the appointed board proposed in the initiative. He also had a fundamental objection to local control, especially when developers are seeking required permits from the state.
And there's really kind of one of three ways that comes out. It's either denied, you can't do that, you can't build your house there, you can't do that, Phil, or you can, you do comply, or you comply with stipulations. You know, we can make it so it'll comply. Okay, well, if Sitka says it can't happen, DEC, Fish and Game, DNR, those agencies are obligated not to permit the project, even if it complies with their authorities. So you're in compliance with the air, land, and water quality standards, for example, but you don't comply with Sitka's plan, so we can't permit it because Sitka won't, you know, because Sitka's said no.
Sitka's Coastal Zone Management Coordinator Marlene Campbell was in the chamber audience. She said that she could recall only three times in the last 30 years when Sitka had refused to approve a permit under the Coastal Zone Management Program. The most recent, a proposed mariculture project in a popular recreation area south of town. Bruce Botello stressed that coastal zone planning was, in Sitka and most communities, built into local government, but without a statewide program, Sitka's plans have no teeth.
There is no obligation, particularly for the federal government, to follow the local enforceable policies. For that matter, some question about whether the state government would be required to as well. And they take the view that they're not.
After an hour of give and take, Chamber President Jerry Hope dismissed members who had to get back to work or to their businesses, but several stayed behind to ask questions of the speakers for almost another hour. Among them, Mayor Westover, Sheila Finkenbinder, a staff member for Representative Peggy Wilson, who supported the program in the legislature, and Marlene Campbell. Here's what they teased out of the debate. Botello conceded that the initiative authors wanted to keep it short and so left out many specific points of law that existed in the previous coastal management program. Fredrickson admitted that he supported the coastal zone management program that existed from 1977 to 2011. He thought the flaws in the initiative were fixable, but did not think that the legislature would have the political will to amend it. Both attributed the current situation to the legislature. Alaskans will vote on their own coastal zone initiative during the statewide primary on August 28th. There's an effort underway to eradicate a lower 48 weed that's choking off plant life in parts of southeast Alaska. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld has more.
Black bindweed is native to parts of Europe, Africa, and Asia. It's been carried to the lower 48, where it's become widespread. Now, it's in Alaska.
This is a plant that you just have to continue to eradicate year after year.
Davin Hafey is Wilderness Stewardship Coordinator at the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council.
It'll wrap itself around whatever's near it, and it'll restrict that plant out. It'll effectively choke it out, and then over time, it would kill off a lot of the native vegetation. Native species in the soil, or even larger species like deer, might depend on both summer and winter.
SEAC, the Forest Service, and Angoon's tribal government have combined forces to eradicate black bindweed. They've been working at Whitewater Bay, south of Angoon, and east of Sitka on Admiralty Island. Volunteer Dick Farnell of Juneau says it's hard work.
Some of them are down right on the ground, and there's thick vegetation from other species that they're intertwined with. So there's no way that you can kind of walk around at standing level and see. You've got to be down on your hands and knees, and you feel sore at the end of the day doing that all day.
The volunteers work with five employees of the Angoon Community Association. Watershed crew leader Calvin Washington says bindweed can be a little tricky.
It's like a heart shape, and the biggest one we saw was about maybe 4 or 5 feet long, and And they do come in all shapes and sizes.
Is this a good job for folks in Angoon? I know unemployment's been pretty high.
Yes, it has. It's really high. And, yeah, it's a good job for the crew for the summer.
The weed likely came to the bay on logging equipment more than 50 years ago. It took a while to spread, but was expanding its range until the eradication effort began. CX Hafey says there's less now than then.
In 2010, the crew went down to Whitewater Bay and picked tons and tons of black bindweed. I mean, it was just everywhere. They were picking it left and right. Last year, it was still fairly widespread, had a little harder time finding it, but we're still finding it in large amounts. This year, we had to look a little bit harder for it. There were some areas where it was very obvious and there were lots of it, but for the most part, we really had to look hard to find it.
The effort will continue for a while. Hafey says black bindweed seeds can take about 8 years to germinate, so even if this crop is gone, there will be more next summer. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Tomorrow is Ted Stevens Day in Alaska. Senator Lisa Murkowski took an opportunity while she was speaking on the U.S. Senate floor yesterday to share that with her colleagues and to remember Stevens. Stevens was revered in Alaska for his ability to bring home aid and projects during his 40 years in the U.S. Senate. Next month will mark 2 years since Stevens died in a plane crash here in Alaska. Last year, the legislature unanimously passed a measure designating the fourth Saturday of every July as Ted Stevens Day. Alaskans are urged to get out and play. Zone weather forecast today for Sitka and Port Alexander calls for patchy fog this morning, rain this morning, then a chance of rain in the afternoon, highs around 60, west winds at 5. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 60 with light winds. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka.